Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Living Vertical Radio, where we change the narrative of media by introducing you to creative and innovative individuals that inspire you with their unique stories. Our host is C. Steen Duckworth, and you can call in or Skype into this program by calling 1-646-668-2928 #1. Please make sure your surrounding area is quiet because this is a live program. One Sure Sign Mobile Notary of Frisco, Texas provides professional notary service across the Dallas metro area. Our notary professionals are ready to help you with loan closings, power of attorney, fingerprinting, and other notary services. We meet you at your location of choice, your home, office, hospital, or local coffee shop, convenient to your schedule. Reliable, professional, and affordable. One Sure Sign is happy to support Living Vertical Radio here in Texas. Mention you heard this ad on Living Vertical for $5 off any notary service. Interested in advertising on our podcast with a listening audience of over 800,000? You can do a 15-second business ad, a 30-second radio ad, or a 10-minute interview radio ad. Our prices start out at $50. Contact us at info@verticalmediagroup.com. Our pricing is made to give everyone the ability to advertising no matter the budget. Thank you. And here's your host, C. Steen Duckworth.
Welcome, everyone. And thank you to our program coordinator, Serena Childress, for that wonderful entry. Stellar job. And for those of you, you heard Once Your Sign is our sponsor, and we're all going through this quarantine right now, and I hope everyone's doing well. You can do what they call a remote notary, which is interesting. It's in Texas. So you can still call that number, and they'll explain what that means if you need to have important papers documented. So today, our guest at Living Vertical is Brandon Cross. Let me give you a little bit of information. Brandon Cross is a very multi-talented young man. His life ended in a serious industrial accident, and yet, out of everything he's went through, he has emerged and is multi-talented. And I want to be able to talk about a lot of this in our interview. He has written a book. It's the first volume in an epic book series called The Legacy. It's based on real events that were taken from the writings and correspondence of a terminally ill young man who is also enduring a life of physical, emotional, and sexual abuse. So join me in this conversation with Brandon Cross. He's a songwriter, filmmaker, and now he's an author. Welcome, Brandon. How are you today?
I am doing great. How are you? How are you in this isolated world?
You know what? Sometimes when I'm at work, I feel isolated, so it almost doesn't bother me.
Yeah, I'm getting a little bit of a kick out of hearing everybody talk about, man, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I'm going, man, for me, that's every day.
Right.
I just sit at my computer writing. That's pretty much what I do.
Well, you know, I looked at it as an opportunity. I was like, oh, man, this is going to get so much work done. So I kind of love the thought that my office is kind of on, you know, the main road. And so I am feeling so good at how quiet it is. I'm like, oh, my God, it's so quiet. I love this.
Yeah, as a filmmaker, I want to go out into the city streets and get film of them being completely empty because, you know, I do a zombie film or something, and that's going to be gold.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? You're right about that. I like to go out very early when there's no one out there, and I mean, it is just the weirdest feeling in a way because, you know, you expect someone to come around the corner or coming down the street. I mean, there's just nothing out there, you know, just nothing. So it's really, really kind of weird. But then again, like you said, this is great inspiration now because if you can think of all the sci-fi and scary movies you can think of around this time. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, gosh. Well, I was going through your book. I was scanning through it really quick. But I'm going to tell you, I was really fascinated at your story. I'm always in the type of person that I encourage a lot of people. And I say, you know, you can really do anything you want to do. And you can, you know, there's no way that you can't change your life if you don't want to. It's a thing of every day you wake up, you have an opportunity. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened to you in your life before you got this, you know, this ideal that you could do more than where you were at the time?
Yeah, I'm going to try to get a lot in a short period of time because first of all, I'm autistic. And in addition to that, I grew up in a pretty negative environment where I was constantly being told everything that I wouldn't ever be able to do or, you know, wasn't good enough to do. And you know, that no matter what you do, that takes a toll. And it took a long time to, you know, convince myself otherwise. And really, even while trying to convince myself otherwise, I was just, you know, doing the everyday thing, the thing that, you know, everybody says you're supposed to go out and do, rather than you making your own choice of what your destiny should be. And while doing that, I was involved in an industrial accident that just hammered me. I mean, my full-time job for the next basically 5 years was rehab and recovery, and ended up being an amputee, pretty much wheelchair bound with a lot of other, you know, a lot of systemic damage as well. And at that point, and it's too bad that it takes, you know, a major event like that, usually, you know, somebody's death or an injury or something like that, for you to say, you know, to heck with it. I am going to live the life I was meant to live. At that point I said, okay, I've always been a writer. I've always been a singer, writing songs, doing all this. That's what I'm going to do now. I'm going to do that properly.
Okay. All right. And so what did it take to you to get to that point? So you have this thought already. So what did it take for you to get to the point where you can start doing what you want to do? And mainly, you know, how does that make you feel when you made that decision? Because I know everyone gets to that point there. You know, a lot of people grow up and think that, oh, I'm supposed to do this when I get out of school, or I'm supposed to do this. And then usually, you know, when they make a decision and say, no, I'm going to do this, and it's just this burst of freedom. I mean, what did you feel?
There were a couple factors involved. One is not really, shall we say, that positive a thing, which is a lot of other options were removed from me. You know, I could no longer work in a traditional type of fashion. But also, part of that is also that just about 5 years before this happened, I had received these correspondences from the child who is the subject of the Legacy series, which was just a massive amount of paperwork. Essentially, he and his friends were writing on computer message boards to each other for 2.5 years until this kid's death. And I'm giving the spoiler, yes, he does die. But I give that away in page one of the book anyway. But when he died, and I did that intentionally, because when you realize that this little guy is going to die as a young child, everything he says throughout the whole series you take completely differently. I mean, it just has a whole new meaning when you realize he's going to die as a child. But when he did die, he left behind, he had printed out these conversations that they were writing to each other online.
Right.
And it was tens of thousands of pages, and they were going to be thrown out. And so I said, hey, I'll take care of those for you. And I'd had them for about 5 years, really hadn't looked at them much. So after this accident, I had 5 years of nothing else to do other than the rehab. And so I started reading through them. And at that point, I realized how unbelievably profound this stuff was, because it's, it's conversations kid to kid, no adults around. And they speak in an unfiltered way. They tell the truths that kids will tell each other but will never tell an adult, or to even tell each other if there's an adult listening. I mean, you're never going to hear these conversations from your kids, because your presence will keep them from having those conversations. Let's put it that way.
That's true. That's very true. I mean, and you know, you gave a little bit of the spoiler, but I tell you, that was a great intro into the book, because it did make you want to, like, oh my goodness. Well, yeah, it's kind of like, okay, let me keep reading this, because it really was a great intro into the book. I remember back in the days talking on forums and stuff. So when you when did you get to the point when you decided, you know what, I'm just going to really publish this? Because you're reading through all those papers, and, you know, you said you didn't really do anything at first. So when did you decide this could be a good story?
I knew that it could as soon as I started reading it, but I kept trying to talk myself out of it. And so you know, I did a lot of other work. I did a lot of music, a whole bunch of work in films, and things like that, and just put this off because I wasn't positive I really wanted to do it. In one sense, I kind of liked just, you know, their world being something of my own private domain. There was something about that I found kind of appealing, even though I knew it could be helpful. I knew it could be helpful to a lot of people, but also because of the fact that there are real people involved, I was always a little hesitant on that. And so then I took pains to, when I finally decided, okay, it's got to be done. It really needs to be done. And the reason I decided that is I showed some of the correspondences to a number of people, child psychologist, actually a prominent record producer friend of mine, and down to a person, every one of them was saying, dude, you have got to publish this. People need to see this.
So finally,
I decided, well, I guess I have to.
Well, let's talk about the adaptation. The Legacy series was really written as a film, and how was the process of adapting the film into the book form? Because I know when I'm reading it, I'm reading it and I'm visualizing that this is a script already.
Yeah, in fact, most of the dialogue, or at least friend to friend dialogue that's in the film, came right out of the books. But it was a process, because what we're talking here is this is a series of 27 books. It may, you know, give or take maybe one book, but I think it'll be 27 is how I have it broken down at this point. And I needed to take that and turn it into one 2-hour movie. So in order to do that, I had to really look at the thing and say, okay, what is the real story? And just get rid of everything else. Just what's the backbone? Mm-hmm. What is the story? And somewhat surprisingly, I was able to do it and get it into what I think is a very good 2-hour script. And what I did was, because this is just kids talking to each other on a computer message board. I mean, that's, you know, it's as simple as that. And what I did is the film, I have them speaking, you know, I upgraded it. I moved it into the present and so they could video chat, because that would be a lot more interesting than just that computer writing.
Right.
But also what I did was they're on the computer. He's talking about things that have happened, that you know, that his babysitter's older teenage son came over and that he was molested and things like that, or that his mom, you know, beat him or whatever. And so what I'm doing is I took kind of a voyeuristic look into his bedroom, and most of the film takes place in his bedroom. Excuse me. And you kind of feel a bit like a voyeur, like you're seeing something private that you really shouldn't be seeing. And so what we're doing is we're showing what in the books he is then talking about.
Well, you know, he has such a great, you know, really a nice personality. You know, Brandy has a really great personality. So how in your book does it teach us about strength and hope?
Well, that's the thing, is he is experiencing and enduring probably about the most hellish life that someone can imagine. I mean, not only are you, you know, terminally ill, but your life is being made a living hell while you are terminally ill. And yet what he ends up doing with this group of friends he has online, he ends up being the one who's helping them through their problems and comforting them when they have issues and things like that. He was just an extraordinary kid. And he was a brilliant kid. And that worked against him on something as anonymous as computer message boards in the early days when, you know, nobody, it's not like Facebook where your picture is right there looking at everybody. You know, it's just words. It's just words.
Right.
And he came across, he was 12 years old. He looked like he was probably about 7. I mean, he was a really little kid. I don't know if his illness stunted his growth or something, but I mean, he was really little and looked a lot younger than he was. Yet he would come across as a lot older than he was because he was brilliant. And all he did, he couldn't do anything else. All he did is sat around in his room and read books. So he knew a lot of stuff. He was a brilliant kid. And so that worked against him because he would, you know, people would say something that was factually incorrect, kind of a little Facebook preview of the world to come. Somebody would say something factually incorrect and he would correct them, and found that people didn't like that. And they would be pretty brutal to him, not thinking about the fact that this is actually a fragile little kid that they're talking to. And so he had a lot of negative experiences through that. But, you know, ultimately, and that's the thing, honestly, what the I'm going back to a question you asked a little earlier about what made me decide this to get to publish this. And what made me decide that is really when Brandy died, there were probably about 10 people on the face of the earth that knew that he had lived, that knew that he existed. I mean, it was a life, you know, just an anonymous life that seemed to have ended up being wasted because, because he had no reach, no influence on anybody. And one thing, these kids were kind of the precursors to the emos. They would write poetry online to express feelings about things they didn't want to talk about, and especially Brandy with the things he was going through. And I knew that these other kids considered him a legitimately talented poet. And so one of the reasons I kept these correspondences was I thought his poetry might be in it, and I wanted to salvage that. And it ended up being very good. And over the years, while I was mulling this whole thing over, I did submit some of his poetry to publications, and it was published. And he got a lot of very positive critical reviews. And I thought, you know, this poetry could really affect people. And so it was mainly the poetry that I thought, you know, that his poetry needs to be out there. And then I started seeing what was in the conversations themselves. And I'm going, you know what, this is more profound than the poetry. And decided, you know, to carry his torch and make his life meaningful, this has to be published. People need to see this because it affects people. Anyone who's read it has been affected because of the kind of person this kid was through everything he was going through. And so his life, where at the end of it, you know, had a reach of about 10 people, now there's countless thousands and tens of thousands of people who are now aware of him and sharing with his story and being affected by his story. He is ending, and that's why I called it what I did, the legacy. This is his legacy. And his legacy has turned from what appeared to be a life almost wasted to a life very well lived.
Right. And you know, it's very obvious in the first part of the book how I'll say the very, very first part, it's very obvious where Brandon has affected the individuals that he has been talking to online. And, and it makes you wonder, well, you know, I won't say what makes you wonder, but, you know, as a writer, it's like you go into a world that is kind of a, I don't know, subculture. So when you're writing, that subculture takes on a life of its own. It's like, I can do anything. I can be anything. I want to be here online. I think it's the same thing today when you're on, you know, Facebook. But I think especially for writers for writers who are writing poetry, I know a lot of times I'll write poetry and it's like, I don't care what you think. It's kind of like, it's my world and I'm going to do, you know, I'm writing something in my world right now. But tell me, what do you think his struggles with terminal illness, you know, he struggled with terminal illness. So tell us about how he coped with that illness. I mean, just in his own, you know, personal life and talking to the people he was talking to online.
You know, honestly, that is an area because I know about him primarily through his correspondences. I mean, that's how, you know, how I've really gotten to know him. I knew of him while he was alive because I knew a couple of the older kids who were talking to him. But, you know, really no interaction to speak of with him himself. And he kept that, the terminal illness is a secret he kept largely to himself until pretty close to the end. And he tells why in the at the beginning of the first book here. He talks to some adults on the message board who have cancer, and he asks, "Is it okay for me to do this?" He said what he told them was, I want to get friends who don't know I'm sick because they'll treat me normally. Every person I know otherwise is either a friend of my illness or they don't like me because of my illness. They're either scared to be around me or they're only my friend because I'm sick. For example, a couple of friends he had at the hospital when they would have treatments together. So he was desperate to just be a normal kid and have normal friends who knew nothing about that and would not treat him differently, which honestly I think was a very healthy attitude. I mean, he wanted to be a normal kid despite everything he was going through. So therefore, we really have very little information on really the struggles he was going through there. And it's unfortunate. I wish we had more, because I'm sure that he had some very important things that he could have said. Now, toward the end, when he does reveal that, he reveals it because he feels the end coming on. I mean, he can tell that this struggle is reaching an end and it's not going to come out well. And so at that point he tells them. And then they talk a little bit about that. And true to what he was saying, one of his online friends stops talking to him, refuses to talk to him for a while, and he can't handle the fact that his friend is going to die and won't talk to him, which Brandy does talk Brandy talks about that, which, you know, was he was really hurt by that. But you know, ultimately his friend got over it and they did end up talking, but honestly I don't think ever like they had before. I think it was I think that friend had really an issue with that from that point on. That kind of an indication that his fears in that regard were completely justified, more than I would have thought.
What do you want readers to receive from your book? What do you want them to receive from it?
It depends on where they are. Kind of like, I don't know if this will be a bad thing to liken it unto this. I mean, as we know, Jesus will meet you where you are, right?
And
in my opinion, the wisdom of these kids will meet you where you are. There are parents who are desperate to understand their desperate to understand their kids. This will help them do that, because this is unfiltered access into a kid's mind and heart. There are kids who feel like they're alone, like they're the only kid who's ever felt a certain way, and they will find out that all these kids did, and that really every kid does. There are adults who had unpleasant childhoods who want to kind of come to terms with that. It will help them do that. So it really will meet different people in their different places, and I think be very helpful to many of them.
Wow, interesting. I know that I have a great relationship with my granddaughter, and we decided a long time ago, we have our own little language and our conversations, but it's always funny that she doesn't, it's what she'll say when something happens and I'll ask her a question, and she says, well, and she won't tell her mom and dad, but she'll say, well, Grandma, now I'm going to tell you the rest of the story, let's sit out and have this conversation. So definitely I can see what you mean in that, because it is it can be, as a parent, it can be scary to not know how your kids are thinking. It's certainly scary when they're in high school or junior high school, even when you really don't have as much access to them. than when you had in elementary school. So it does get, you know, scary. So I can imagine just the freedom of being online and not having to, you know, your parents not really knowing what's going on or know, understanding the conversation. It's not always a bad thing, but at the same time, it is very hard on a parent to not know what their kids are thinking and not
right.
having any,
and,
yeah.
I was just going to say, and the thing is, no matter how great a parent thinks their relationship is with their kids, I promise you, there are things going on in that kid's head that the parent has no clue of.
Yeah, absolutely.
And probably would just be amazed to find out is going on in their heads. And on Amazon, I have a review on the book where the guy said, I felt like I was driving the car with my kid and his friends in the back seat whispering to each other, and I finally got to hear what they're saying. I thought that was a beautiful analogy, because this is exactly what that is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when can we expect the second book in the series? What's next?
The second book in the series, it will be released on May 12th. And it's extraordinary, because in book one, really, it's fairly lighthearted because these kids are just getting to know each other. So they're telling jokes back and forth. They're talking about music, which incidentally, for an adult, is a great nostalgia trip to hear the music and movies and stuff that they're talking about. Because this is in 1992 and the end of 1992, beginning of 1993. So they're talking about Depeche Mode and all, you know, I mean, it's fun nostalgia trip, but at any rate, it's largely lighthearted because they don't know each other well enough to start sharing the secrets. And in book two, they become more familiar with each other and some of the dark secrets start emerging. We find out, that about 2 months before, in addition to what Brandy is going through, there's an older teenage girl who a couple months prior to this, her best friend committed suicide. Another of the older teens, we find out, had been sexually abused for 4 years, which ended also about 2 months prior to this.
Oh, okay.
2 months. And so, you know, all these kids. And the thing is, and there's a reason for this. There's a reason why it happened to be these kids who Brandy befriended. This is, as I said, the end of 1992, beginning of 1993. I mean, this is a couple years before the release of Windows 95. I mean, come on. You know?
Right. Okay.
There was no Amazon. There was no Facebook. You did not go online to shop or something like that.
Right.
This was
right.
In fact, it wasn't even an internet. It was intranet. They were closed systems. You could only talk to people who were within the bulletin board system you were using. And,
absolutely right.
Yeah. So who this primarily appealed to at the time were kind of the outcasts. They were the kids who really didn't have a lot of friends, and even adults who didn't have a lot of friends and relationships in the outside world. That's who it appealed to. So it makes sense. It's perfectly logical that the kids that he would find on there are not kids who are having just these wonderful, lovely lives, but kids who are going through issues that they're trying to deal with. So we find that it's not just Brandy. It is the other kids as well. And they all end up just helping each other. It almost becomes this kid-to-kid therapy group, support group, in essence. It's mm-hmm. great. It's absolutely great.
You know, that's great that when you say it becomes like a kid's therapy group, because I think that I think in a lot of ways when I'm, you know, listening, you know, reading the book and then listening to you as well, it makes me think about that. You know, these kids actually found a way to really cope with the things in their life just between them without having to go and talk to a counselor. It almost makes you wonder sometimes if kids can work out their own issues without adults, or, you know, when does the adult need to come in and when does the adult not need to come in? You know, and it might be very different nowadays because, like, you know, some things I question about kids being on these different social medias, because I think in a way sometimes it could be more harm than it could be more good. You know, but look, just looking at this story, I remember those days. So you couldn't really judge a person, you couldn't see them, but sometimes it was pretty therapeutic.
Yeah, it was, and the shall we say anonymity, and I use that with air quotes because it's anonymous in that you couldn't see each other, so you had to imagine mm-hmm. who, you know, you had to create this picture, and they describe themselves to each other, but you're still creating a picture in your mind. But because, you know, on Facebook, like I said, you've got their face looking at you, you've got a million pictures of them, you've got picture of what they
right.
ate for lunch today. I mean, everything. It's right there
right.
in front of you. And,
right.
But, yeah, in these, back then, all you had was the emotion they were putting out. You were getting all the superficial garbage on the surface is gone, and all you're getting is a discussion from one heart to another. And
to another, right?
These kids become, yeah, these kids, it's amazing how close they become because all, you know, all the superficial surface garbage is removed. And
mm-hmm.
I honestly think they became closer than most people do in face-to-face, because
yeah.
in face-to-face, even if you're not aware of it, all your biases, even your prejudices,
mm-hmm.
all that is coming out because of what there is on the surface. And
mm-hmm.
there was none of that
right.
here. It was mm-hmm. it did not exist here. And it was great. And they were even surprised. They were shocked at how close they became and how fast they became that close. But I
right.
think it makes sense because they were sharing their inner souls and only their inner souls. And it, you know,
mm-hmm.
if you think about it in that way, it makes sense.
It does make sense. Well, tell me, I know we've talked about, you said, like, you know, a lot of parents are getting, you know, really learning some things, you know, with this conversation of the young teens online. Did you write this book for the teens, or did you write it for the parents? Who do you think you were writing it for when you first started?
I think in my mind, I think I primarily was thinking of the kids.
Okay.
But then I started thinking about, you know, this, I can't stay away from this. I keep having to come back and get more, and I'm not a kid any longer. So, hey, you know, there's, and I recognized that it showed me, because when I first started working on this, I mean, I had some very young kids. And it
mm-hmm.
was striking me that you know, I guarantee I don't know them like I think I do. And
yes.
that kind of changed my perspective a little bit on that. And then when I started showing it to other people, like I said, I had a child psychologist read it, and her response to me was, this should be mandatory reading in child psychology school, you know, to get your
right.
child psychology degree. This should be mandatory.
Right.
And then my record producer friend, you know, they are adults. And when I saw how powerful they felt it was for them, not just, oh, well, I think other people would, I mean, they were talking about how it had changed them. And
oh, okay.
Yeah. And I'm going, at that point, I'm going, well, yeah, it looks like there's something for the adults too. And then
okay.
and then I started realizing that, you know, there may be almost more for the adults. Although, I don't know. I don't want to say that because it minimizes what it means to kids. Because it's so powerful for kids. I've seen kids when I've had them read some certain selections from it. And a couple of them have literally said, I thought I was the only one who ever thought that.
Oh, yeah. Okay, right.
And it's like,
right.
Wow. It's mm-hmm. like you see their eyes light up and their mind opening and going, holy smokes, I'm not the only
yeah.
one. I'm not as alone mm-hmm. as I thought I was.
Right. Yeah, because I think it's very different from a parent telling you you're not the only one and then to actually read someone your age, you know, and you realize, no, I'm not the only one. It's kind of like when people say, you know, it's like when your parents tell you, oh, you know, we really like how you do this, but it doesn't really stick with you unless it's someone you really care about saying it. So it's like if someone, your peer says it, it's even more, it's better than when your parents saying it, you know? So,
yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Kind of like,
because
yeah,
your parents, yeah. yeah, if you have good supportive parents, they're going to be good and supportive. They're going to tell you what
right.
the things. Not
right.
all of which may be completely true. and,
right, right.
You know, when they tell you, oh, you're special. You are better than everyone else. You can do anything you want, that type of thing. It's, I mean, parent talk. It's adult talk
right.
or parent talk.
Absolutely.
And kids,
right,
you know,
right.
kids will absorb as much of that as they need to, but they're going to let a lot of that bounce off of them too because they know
right.
it's
uh-huh.
parent talk. But when they see... But when they see a kid that they never knew and who was a kid 25 years ago
uh-huh.
expressing exactly what they are feeling now, it is an unbelievably eye-opening and mind-opening experience for them.
I bet. So now... We know you have a series of books that you're going to be doing. So what other projects are you going to be working on? Are you just going to take some time and just follow through with this series or whatever? What other things are you working on right now?
This is definitely moving my focus more toward books because I'm going to be spending, you know, it's going to take a lot of time and effort over probably 5 years to get all
mm-hmm.
these out. But at the same time,
right.
For example, well, first of all, I mean, I'm on in post-production on the film, and so that's
okay.
eating up some time as well, and I'm having to, you
mm-hmm.
know, fly 1,500 miles away quite a bit or drive it to do some certain work on the post-production on the film. But also my record
right.
label is having me record some new music because they're – looking at this and going, oh, wow, so you're, you know, this is, you know, that people are becoming interested in the book and there's been,
uh-huh.
there's going to be the film and let's put out some music. So I'm recording some new music right now. I also,
great.
The label just, the label just notified me, in fact, that some LA Hollywood producer contacted them about putting... one of my songs in their film, so
that's
kind of fun.
Exciting. Yeah, that would be kind of fun. That's exciting.
Yeah,
for sure.
So, you know, who knows?
So
I mean, for every promise that's kept in Hollywood, there are 1,000 made. So who knows?
Oh, okay, all right. Oh gosh. So. So I have a couple of questions. I have one more question for you. Where can readers find your book, and where can they follow you?
I can be found at brandoncross.com, and that's B-R-A-N-D-Y-N, Brandon with a Y, cross.com. I also, I've got a personal Facebook page where I just put fun stuff, and then I have the professional Facebook page where I put career information. And
okay.
I also, if they want to come and interact with us, I have a Facebook group called Thriving with Autism and Disabilities. And
okay.
It's a wonderful place. I try to put inspirational things about up there about the fact that, hey, you know, I don't care if you're autistic. I don't care if you're disabled. I am all of the above. But I'm not letting that stop me from doing everything I want to do. And let's help people who don't think they can do, you know, fulfill their dreams and all that because of issues like that. Let's help them get that done. And as far as the book, it's on Amazon and probably thousands of other places, but Amazon is where most people seem to go for it. So yeah, so if you go on Amazon, look up the leg. Yeah, exactly. So if you go on Amazon and look me up, you'll find the book.
Okay.
And you'll
find
my music. You'll find some of my music too. I've got music videos on YouTube as well if they want to check those out.
Okay. So I always ask, multi-talented individuals, or even the creative individuals that are on our program, is what advice would you give to an up-and-coming author? In your case, it could be an author or songwriter. I mean, you know, you have such a great story to inspire and empower people. So what kind of advice would you give to someone up and coming that may be struggling or they want to be a writer? What have you learned in your time?
The best, I'll go with the books, because I think I can probably make the biggest difference to the biggest number of prospective writers by talking about books.
Okay.
Because I do have, shall we say, a secret. I know everybody's got their own writing style, but the problem is some writing styles hold people back. And
okay.
I cannot count the number of times prospective writers, and again, I'm not sure if that's a great term. I mean, you're either a writer or you're not. If somebody wants to be a writer, it's very simple. Sit your butt down and write. You know, but,
right, right.
And but you know, a writer who is still looking ahead to being published, let's put it that way. I cannot count the number of times that I've had someone come to me and say, "Yeah, I'm trying to work on this book, but I'm stuck. I've got this plot hole I ended up finding, you know, I painted myself into a corner, I've got writer's block, I mean, whatever, that they don't know how to move forward on their manuscript." And invariably,
okay.
the reason is very simple, and it's because there are a couple basic things that they didn't do. And, you know, not everybody does all these, but in my opinion, they should. One is to create an elevator pitch on the book. And that
is,
in 30 seconds, you need to be able to tell somebody what your story is. And why that's important is I've conducted workshops where I have people bring in a story, and I ask them, well, what's the story? And they go, you know, through this long meandering tale with all these extraneous details and this and that. And then I stop them and say, okay, now you have 30 seconds to tell me, what's your story? And invariably, virtually every time, what they discover in that 30-second telling of their story is their story isn't what they thought it was.
Wow, okay.
Because they only have time to go through the backbone. They can't give me any of the, you know, they don't have time for any of the subplots or extraneous details or anything like that. They've got to just, here's the story. And they go, wow, whoa, I didn't know that's what my story was. And so if you don't really know what your story is, then, hey, you're going to have a hard time writing it. And then the second thing, and this is where it gets into an issue of writing style, but in my opinion, people should adopt this writing style. I will say, on the surface, I never get writer's block. I never paint myself into a corner. I never find plot holes I didn't anticipate. Never.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because I am just so unbelievably brilliant. It's because I've learned how to structure it. And what I do is I outline the thing ad nauseum. I mean, I outline it to where I've got a plot point that I need to cover about every page and a half for 2 pages. This has to be covered.
Wow.
And that outline, with that outline, you can analyze the beats, make sure that certain events are happening where they should be in that progression of the story. You will find out if you skipped, if you had A goes to B, goes to C, oops, goes to E, I forgot D, there's got to be a D in there to make E make sense. You will find all those. And you will not get writer's block. Yeah, you will absolutely not get writer's block. What you will find is that what you're actually doing is struggling to keep this point only to 1.5 or 2 pages. You're struggling to keep it down. And it's magical. And it helps you work a lot faster, too. I use this. I've written over 100 TV episodes. I use that same method for those. I've written numerous screenplays. I use the same method for that. And by using that, I can write and have, I can write 4 TV episodes in a day. I can write a screenplay ready to, you know, production ready within a week. And it's, again, it's not because I'm so brilliant. It's because I found a system that works and I use it. And it keeps you for most of your time. Most of your time writing, and I'm sure a lot of lights are going to go on going, yeah, is sitting there chewing on your fingernails going, what do I do? What do I say? And you eliminate all that. You are just, your fingertips are smoking.
Well, you just gave a great, talked about a great way for people to structure their books that are trying to write. I know that a lot of times I've heard different writers say, I don't use an outline. I don't outline. I just write. But I know a lot of people that could very well use that structure. And I think that you make a very good point, because having that structure allows you to really flow. It allows you to flow. So I think that however you structure it, you make a very good point when you say, I want to write a book. Well, what's your book about? Well, if you don't know what the book's about, how are you going to write it? They're just, what's the story about? You do have to have that. Yeah.
And as far as that rare person who can just sit down and start writing and actually come up with a well-balanced, proper, interesting story that progresses in, has a structure that it should, has the beats that it should, and you don't end up in some left field corner that you didn't intend to get into. There are certainly writers who can do that. All I can say about that is they are better people than I, because I can't, I would get myself in trouble constantly, and I would waste so much time, and I just don't like to waste time.
Right. And see, that's a very good point.
So my hat's off.
Time, right?
Yeah. So my hat's off to anybody who can actually do that. But what I will absolutely promise is that is the extremely rare exception and not remotely the rule. So if you want to, if you want, so especially if you're kind of fairly new at this, that's your saving grace. Outlining and a 30-second pitch is your saving grace. It will keep you from becoming so frustrated that you give up writing.
Absolutely. Well, Brendan, it's been great having you on our program, and it's really it's wonderful to, you know, like I said, you're a great example of someone who has gone through some things in their life and has turned out to be a very multi-talented person. And now you're, you know, doing this legacy, which is really, you know, interesting. I'm looking forward to reading the rest of the series as you get the books out. Definitely. And would love to have this book. And someone out there, if you're interested in having a copy of Brendan's book, you can drop me an email at info@Vertical Life Magazine, and we have a copy that we'll give away so you can start reading this wonderful series. So, Brendan, thank you for being on our program today.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. So, everyone, we just want to thank you for being avid listeners of Living Vertical Radio. You've had a chance to hear Brendan Cross's story, and you heard about his book, The Legacy. You can get The Legacy at Amazon, and we will be posting his information on Vertical Life Magazine, and we'll be sharing it constantly on our social media, so you'll be able to get his book. You'll know where to go. If you want to go to his website, we'll also post that as well. And thank you for my volunteers who have helped me put this program together. I really appreciate the time and effort that you put in. And also, we'll be posting new information about our writing retreat in Ireland. We have moved the date, and we will be posting that new date on our social media. So everyone, thank you for being part of Vertical Life Magazine. Thank you for listening to Living Vertical Radio and Brendan Cross today. And everyone, have an awesome day.